You're listening to the Staffa Corner Podcast, a Staffa-tarian look at entertainment and life with your host, Greg Staffa.
My guest today is a special one because she reminds me a lot of myself. When I first got injured on the job, I was told that things had to get worse before they got better. And that was a common element that I kept on seeing with both my injury and my homelessness was you're never homeless enough. It had to get worse. You're living in your car, but in order to get help, you had to lose your car in order to become better. And one of the things that got me through it was the driving myself to prove that I can pull myself up, that what you do and what you do with the motivation that you're given. So today's guest is a special one. Her name is Andrine Ward-Hammond. She can be seen on shows like Claws, Manifest, and even more recently, Your Honor, which is a great series if you haven't checked it out. And the reason why she's interesting to me is because she was working a 9-to-5 job, and then she discovered a tumor. What she did with her situation to improve herself is deeply inspiring to me. So, Andrine, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Greg. I had no idea, and congrats on it all.
Thank you. So, you're working a 9-to-5 job, and you discover that you have this tumor. And I think most people these days would say, you know, if you get injured on the job or you discover a tumor, you go to the doctor, and the doctors take care of it. You have, you know, there's health insurance. Even if you don't have health insurances, that's what America does. We take care of our poor. We take care of the people that are sick. We take care of those in need. And you found a different result. What did you find?
Oh, man. I had just started the job. I could not qualify for health insurance. I can't even remember. It was like for 3 to 6 months. So I was on the cusp, actually, when I got sick. And generally, because I didn't have any insurance, my only go-to was going to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. So I would get, you know, $25,000 and $30,000 medical bills and just kind of push them off because who could afford, you know, $30,000 out of pocket?
Sure.
And I could, you know, you can't do, I can't go just to a regular doctor because that's unfortunately not how the system works. But when I got sick, I collapsed, went to the ER, and they let me know that I could not, that although the tumor appeared benign, that if it burst, I could pass because it would just be internal bleeding. But mm-hmm. It had not been so bad that they could remove it emergency-wise, that I would still have to go to a doctor, just a regular physician, specifically for it, before surgery could be done. But it's so big that it needed to be done quickly. So, like, it was this weird fine line that they had for me, and they wanted me to pay for my surgery before I had the surgery, or I would just have to wait for it to burst. And it was so funny because it was wrapped, it was tightly wound inside of me.
Oh, wow.
So when when he took a picture, the surgeon took a picture of it, it was like a soft basketball, like literally the size of a basketball, but it was like wound. You know how you take a balloon and you twist it into like little polyps kind of?
Sure.
And that was what was inside of me. And it unraveled inside of me. So I went from like being this relatively small frame, maybe like a size 7 at the time. And when it unraveled, I looked like I was about 4 or 5 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
So it was, yeah, but you could see it. And I could not get the care. They wouldn't do anything additional.
And that surprises me because even in my own situation where it's like, You're homeless, you're living in your car, but we need you to sell your car for things to get worse before we can help you. And it's like, okay, I'm breathing now, everything is good, I have a place to sleep at least. Why don't we fix it now or take care of the problem? That way it's not worse but you want to see me when it gets worse, which is going to cost a lot more. And I think it's just amazing because you know, when you're going through it, I'm sure it felt like you were alone and how does this happen in America? But then the more you start talking about things like this, you start realizing that other people have similar situations where you're like, you know, I was raised that if you got sick, you go to the doctor. And whether you had health insurance or not, they take care of you. And it just, it's surprising how much the system doesn't always work for people. And that's unfortunate.
And it's crazy because everybody says, if you work hard, you know, you work hard, then you'll get this thing. And I was like, I've always worked. There was never not a time since I was not working since the age of 16. Like I've always, and I was working a job. Like, how is it that I'm working a full-time job and I'm still not
making
able
it
to get the care that I need to even work? And I was so sick that I could not work because they had to give me pain meds just so that I could sustain this thing. So I couldn't even be on the job. And the job needed me. So it was so unfortunate. And people look at it like, well, if you, you know, only if you, like, no, that's
not how the system works. No. So at this point, then, you had a choice. You could drown yourself in your own sorrows, or you can make a change. And I think that's what defines a lot of people is what you do next. You're dealt with the situation. Right. What did you do?
And for me, I unfortunately, you find a way to manipulate the system so that it kind of works in your favor. Like, I was grateful that I have family within the medical field and social work, and they have to tell me how to, okay, well, if you go to this hospital has a way to navigate you through not just like any surgeon, but this particular surgeon. And like, it's so bizarre how, and it took a while to even get there that I was able to do that, but it wasn't like a fast process. And when I was finally able to get this thing out of me and how many thousands of dollars later that I wasn't able to afford, I mean, at this point, it's like, if I can work this hard to just make ends meet, why shouldn't I be doing something that I absolutely love and still, you know, even if I fail at it, because I'm doing this thing for ends meet to the best of my ability, like, you know, top 10 in the nation in that particular company for sales, and it still wasn't even enough to get promoted. So I was like, you know, let's throw caution to the wind at this point, because I have a little girl. She's, at the time, I think she was 6 or 7.
Oh, wow.
No, she was 6, because she had just turned 7 right before I had surgery. And we live in this small apartment. It really becomes, what do I have to lose? Because she could have lost me. And the system that does not work in my favor, I'm literally going to just go ahead and throw caution to the wind. I know how aggressive I am with my work ethic. So let me do something that I love and let's see where it lands.
And you landed.
Super grateful. Like, you know, it was a process because I quit that job back in 2009, 2000, I got sick in 07. Had surgery 07, 08. I want to say I quit in 2009. And it was literally on a prayer. I was like, God, you know, just if you want me to save the job, they'll promote me. And they said no, that my credit wasn't good enough to get a promotion. I was like, wow, okay. And I cried, put in my 2-week notice, and survived on my tax return for a few months and started my own business with my business partner. And that was back in 2009. And I haven't looked back since. At this point, and that is the vision that I wanted to give my daughter as well. Like, anything is possible, even with the restraints and the lack of opportunities. Like, you have to fight tooth and nail for it. Sometimes it really just is not there. The system does not make sense, but you have to know that there is something amazing on the other side of your drive.
And the only person looking out for you is you. I mean, even family and friends care about you, but the only person that's going to change or improve your life or the directions, and that's, I think, what's so inspiring about your story. Being dealt with something medical or an injury or something like that, it's what we do with what we're given, not only to get through it and survive, but then come out of it with, I mean, it would be easy to be jaded with everything they went through, not trusting, not, you know, just the system failed me and kind of be, you know, upset about that and kind of bring your world around you down. And instead, you thrived and formed a, you know, a business with your partner and then started acting. So what was your first couple of gigs like going, having not had that kind of background?
It's so funny because I always loved the theater. I was doing it when I was, when I graduated high school. I've always loved it. Came to Georgia and thought that that was it. Like, you get your headshots and then you put on and then nothing happened. Went to school, had my daughter. And when I finally decided, when I was teaching kids that I wanted to do it, I had, you know, a few adults was like, you know, people in my class was like, I think you're really good at it. I'm like, yeah, you know, whatever. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it's cool. Got my first agent. When I say it was such a horrible experience, I think I had two auditions that year, and I was taught that you don't talk to the agent. You only email when it's absolutely necessary. She wouldn't contact you unless, like, it was specifically about a gig that was beneficial to her. And I went on one audition in the year, and I was like, if this is what this life is like, I don't really want it. Like, this is not fun. And when I went to another class, I met my current agent, Alex White, and he was like, no, I think you're really good, that it'll, I think you'll be, you know, pretty successful. Got the audition after I was definitely getting more auditions, but I guess I didn't know what it looked like the, you know, how many no's you would get before an actual yes. Mm-hmm. Although I enjoyed the process, it was a little daunting. And when I got the first yes, it was, my goodness, like an avalanche. Like, it was, they were coming, like, the bookings were, they were huge, but I was finally getting them, and I was an amazing experience. And I think over the process, I'm learning still to enjoy the journey, because I think even with my peers, it looks like, oh, yeah, we got to get the next gig and we got to do this next one. You're on a project and you're thinking about the next project. Like, there's no real end to that kind of thought process. Like, there's no, you know, I've won kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning, even with the early ones, as I look back on it now, is I want to enjoy the process more. Grateful for each booking, but, you know, just, I auditioned. They like me enough to see me. This is where I am with it. I'm enjoying getting to the hotel or getting to the trailer or, you know, just the process of, oh, I got to send my sizes. Just the little bits of it is, like, even in the beginning that I don't think I appreciated as much.
You think,
looking back, like, oh, you were great.
Do you think some of it had to do with everything that you went through, taught you a little bit of, I don't know, humility, appreciation a little bit more, to appreciate the little things? I know for me, as a critic, you know, it's easy to see some of these people jaded and wanting to ask gotcha questions and make a name for themselves. And it's like, really? After everything I've been through, I just kind of see people as people. It's not, you know, they're not these big stars that are untouchable anymore. You learn to be a little bit, how you view people is different once you go through something like you went through. Is that some of your approach in doing so?
Yeah, it makes you more human. Like, I things are things, and these experiences, I think I enjoy them more because of the relationships that I cultivate out of it. At the end of the day, all of these things, I appreciate more how I make people feel through our experiences. Because when you're not doing well, it doesn't matter what booking you have or what the next project is. The experience that I have with the people that I'm with is what I'm going to remember most. So with every booking or with each opportunity, I look at the friendships that I get out of it. So it's funny because I still get a bit starstruck and with each experience, I'm like, oh gosh, it's so inviting, especially with some of the ones that I've been on, that these people are now my friends. Mm-hmm. Like there's the human side of it. Like I can call this person when I need them. They can call me. They feel comfortable enough that I'm somebody that they can confide in or talk to or find some solace or some comfort in me to go through whatever they're going through. It is becoming less about fame and more about experiences and my relationships with them. I think I'm more grateful to that than anything in this, and that I'm able to actually enjoy that part of it more than anything, you know?
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your daughter. She seems to be an influential part of your life. And one of the things I've noticed about even looking at like your IMDb page, you are very authoritative in your casting. your officer, you're an attorney, a lot of your characters are strong, independent women. Is that a casting choice? Yeah. Is that something that you're trying to be a positive role model for your daughter? Is that just luck of the draw? How does that come about? Because you don't play too many just average people. You're an authoritative, strong woman in most of these.
I appreciate getting those roles. I think that's me by nature. I'm very I've always been an independent. My mom, how she raised me. I'm super warm. Like you can talk to me about anything, but I'm pretty no nonsense. I'll give you the truth with a hug. But that's how I raised my daughter. I want that in the event that I'm not here, that you can take care of yourself. So I try my very best to be a reflection of that so that she gets it. And I feel like that's how the roles kind of turn to me. I feel like Black women specifically, especially in mom roles, we're not often seen as the most gentle. And that's pretty much what you see. Like I would like to see more women, more Black women in to see that we are warm, we are given. But I think that's because we're seen like that. It's not that we aren't, but it's easier to cast for that. I think it's we have no reason but to be strong. So that's the part that shines most.
I guess I didn't mean it as a, I didn't mean it as a negative. I just meant more that you're not just, you know, this weak woman sitting in the background of things. It's you're a leader. I mean, you look at Manifest and stuff like that. Yeah. You're in charge. I mean, and that's the kind of approach that I was taking with the questioning.
No,
there.
I didn't think you took it as like that. I didn't. No, that's not how I received it at all. I'm appreciative of the role, but I feel like because we have to be strong, it's so easy to see it, if that makes sense. Like we generally have to uphold that. I have to be strong for this kid just to make sure she can survive without me. I mean, after the health scare, that was my goal. You have to be able to take care of yourself if I'm not here. And I think that's a reflection in the auditions that I get.
Okay.
And I don't necessarily often appear physically soft. My resting, I'm sorry for cursing, but my resting bitch face says a lot. So I'm really, really appreciative of the roles that I get and the strength behind the roles, because that's how I carry myself.
Sure.
But I'll give you a hug at the end.
Well, that's great.
Definitely.
So you started off doing some, you know, guest appearances. You'd play a character here, a character there. And then over the last probably 2 or 3 years, you've started picking up more roles that were reoccurring. I think, Claus was a big one, and now Manifest. Do you like doing, besides the stability of it all and the paycheck, do you like having more of a character that you can develop over the course of a season? Or are these kind of appearances that you do here and there kind of fun?
Those roles are fun, but it would be nice to see, to get a role where you can see the arc. Like, you know, I can play around with the direction of where this character can go, instead of kind of dancing, just kind of dancing in one and jumping out. It does teach me something different as an actor, because I'm so used to getting a role here and there and, you know, just doing what I can to support the character in that moment and stepping away. But I love playing on Claude because it's already a super colorful show. But with Manifest, there is more room to play. I can give them a little more that the writers can say, oh, okay, we can do this with her. Let's see what happens if we do this. Or, you know, it has been fun because I'm still learning. I always say I'm still green. You know, I've been so used to doing the gay player role or like one or two here and there, but it's been fun to see what I'm capable of.
Now, was it hard coming into a second season and being kind of thrown into, you're in almost every episode of season two. Did you watch the show prior to being cast on it?
I did, and my friends are more fans of it than were more. So it was like when I jumped on it, my friends were already like super fans of it, and filling me in and giving me all the story before I could watch it, which is absolutely funny. I was like, let me enjoy my process too. But to jump in, it was, I love Melissa and JR and Josh. Like it was like we knew each other in a past life. Funny. We always have fun on set, and to have been in the full, to just about been in the full season, I felt like we were a family. So it wasn't hard to get into it and kind of find my footing in there. It was a good feel. And it was an unfamiliar space. The authoritative kind of the authoritative, very in your face role wasn't foreign. So it was easy and it was fun, and they made it fun. Like that was, I think of many of the projects that I've been on, I felt like I was most home there.
Oh, really? With Manifest?
Yeah, because I was there most often, and it was. But it, from the beginning, it was always a warm place to be and to be on set and to have cast members that I felt like I could play with, even with the heavier tone. It felt comfortable. It felt safe to giggle in between takes with Melissa when we're supposed to be serious. Is so much fun.
Going into the beginning of that season, second season, did you know how much of a role that you would have? Or is it something that gets kind of developed over the course of a season?
No, I think I was supposed to have been on there for 2, maybe 3 episodes.
Oh, wow.
And then I kept getting added. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I'm doing something right. Like, I mean, at least that's what it feels like. You feel like you're given enough that they're thinking enough to develop who this person is in there, even in the supportive manner. So, I was surprised. I was really just banking on 2 or 3 episodes, and that would have been okay with me. So for them to write me in as many of the episodes in season 2 and ask me to come back in season 3, overwhelming gratitude.
So back when you're doing retail, wondering if you were going to get that promotion or not and feeling that rejection, now you're on a top show, getting called back for season 3, and I think a lot of it is just attitude. I think, not that you had a bad attitude prior, but I think what you went through in some ways, subtle or not, changes a person. To go through what you did changes an attitude. And maybe you might not notice it yourself, but I think, and again, I'm not saying that you didn't have work ethic before or anything like that, but I think you go through something like that and you appreciate things more. You have more of a drive. You have, I know where I can fall back to, and I don't want to go back there, so I'm going this direction. I'm going to do everything I can to go keep going in that direction. And I think that's what makes it you successful. And it's that approach. And you may not fully see the change or whatnot, but I'm sure people around you see your happiness and stuff like that. And I almost wonder where you would be had it not been for the tumor. Have you ever thought about that?
Oh, yeah. It was funny because it goes back as far as where would I be if I didn't have my daughter? Because I had my daughter in my sophomore year of college. And the idea that I would not be successful after her. And then the tumor came, and I was like, okay, well, you're in this job that you have to take care of her, so what would happen if this didn't happen? I as rough as these experiences have been, it does, I'm appreciative for every circumstance, for every challenge that's placed, because you backed me into a corner. Now I know how to get myself out of it. Now I know how to work towards it, and I'm just the more grateful for the experience. My work ethic has always been good. And I think that's why I was even successful at that job. But it was like, if I'm doing that thing for something that I don't have passion for, what would it look like if I put effort into the thing that I love and even giving back to others? Because even this career has its peaks and valleys, and you know, I've been asked, you know, like, well, what do you do when it feels dry? Like it doesn't feel like it's going your way. Well, it's not going my way in this moment. What's the best thing that I can do? I can just give back. I have friends who haven't seen the same sort of quote unquote successes that I have had. And I view success lightly because, you know, it registers different for everyone. But if, and having challenges with audition or self-tapes or, okay, well, what can I do to give back? Oh, I can pay you this, Andrew. No, what can I do to help you? So I'm also I'm trying not to generate any static energy. We don't want to give any negative energy to anything that we have, because there's a reason that I didn't get a specific role. There's a reason that these things haven't happened. But what can I do to help this person feel like, okay, this next step will be beneficial to them? So I always try to keep not only a positive mindset, but just keeping the energy good, because I think that's when all of the positivity is sent your way. And that, with my drive and with my work ethic, can only pretty much exacerbate any of the stuff that's happening for me and for those that are around me. So I just try to be more in that sense.
And you had said before that one of the things that you're trying to do is change the image of Black women in television and films. Are you finding that shows like Manifest and like Your Honor is giving you a voice to kind of do that? Or what do you think that – what more needs to be done? And how would you tell a young woman looking and getting into acting, you know, that sees that same kind of perception of Black women – is there change coming? Are you seeing that change? I know you've only been doing this for a few years, but is there a good sense of feeling that you're liking the direction, or are we taking a step back, or how do you see it?
Absolutely. I there is a huge change coming, because there's already a rumble happening now. And for as terrible as COVID has been and our quarantining, the social awareness that's marinating right now, that's come, you know, it's pretty much bubbling on it. It's on the surface, has only brought it to light. We're looking at Issa Rae's, we're looking at Marsha Martin. You know, they are creating content for those women who don't like the image that we're seeing, you know, create opportunities for others so that more of our stories can be told. And I say our in the general aspect, like if you don't like what you're seeing on television, okay, well, what can you do to create content? There are other forms of media that could be, I mean, platforms that it could be sent on, and we're seeing more of that. I think absolutely, Your Honor, is a different story. Like, it, you might not like who Big Mo is when you watch her, but I feel like I bring a very human aspect to the woman that she is. You know, you look and you see this woman, she's unassuming, but she has so much power, and she's in the community, and you see the drugs, and you see all of this, and it's like, oh, well, it doesn't seem like the best picture painted, but she is creating opportunities for those around her, even if those opportunities are not masked in the best light. These are the opportunities that are given for the survival of those that are in the community. So how do we, you know, what do we do to change that? I'm hoping that I bring, with every role that I have, a very a human aspect that you can sympathize with the character, because we're all connected. And just in our everyday experiences, we lose sight of that. That's why folks are not able to look at us individually and say, yeah, I feel sorry for them. Or, you know, that's why we're not able to connect in many aspects, because we're not able to sympathize with one another or empathize with one another. And mm-hmm. I think that's the goal of my work when I do perform, is that you can see the human side of this character, that you can connect with them, even though you might not like them, and that you understand them. And I want to bring that understanding to it. And for the young women that are in it, you don't like what you see, or you like what's happening, create more content. Be vocal about it. Find ways in the characters, especially if you're performing, that people will see the characters as human beings. And I feel like I bring to Big Mo.
And again, Big Mo is a character you play on the hit series Your Honor, which is a Bryan Cranston series on Showtime, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And if one of these women that are producing and whatever came up to you and said, you know what, I have X amount of dollars, I want you to create something, pick your genre, pick, you know, whatever, is there a dream kind of role that you've always kind of said, God, I'd love to play this person, or I'd love to do a series set in this?
To be honest with you, I haven't. There has not been kind of wrapped my head even around the experiences that I've had thus far.
Oh, really?
I feel like I'm like in a dream sequence, to be honest with you. Like this all still feels very surreal. Trying to stay in the moment enough that I'm enjoying the opportunities as they come. I had not thought that far ahead. And that's sometimes a scary thought for me. But I'm really enjoying the process of this. I'll probably feel different in about a year, but it still feels a little unreal. Like this thing that I thought that I could not attain, 12 years ago, I've never had the life that I have right now. So it's really hard to see past it in this very moment with so many great things happening around me.
Sure. No, I fully understand, and not to keep on bringing my own story, but I think there's a fear that if you do slow down and kind of look around or kind of try to enjoy it a little too much, you almost fear that you're going to get greedy or it's going to snap back and reality is going to hit you. So you just kind of keep on looking forward and not kind of dwell back on it. So I fully understand that. Have you been doing it enough where you can you turn on, like, you know, Breaking Bad's on TV? Can you watch that and see Brian as Walter White, or has TV kind of been ruined now that you've been in it and in the middle of it and seeing everything? Are you able to still enjoy TV, and what do you watch?
Oh man, I think I've exhausted television. I think I've watched everything on television, especially with quarantine. I watch everything. I really like, I'll turn on the streaming services and watch a trailer. And if the trailer is engaging, I'll watch it, even if it's a lower budget project. I don't think I'm terribly jaded by actual performance and knowing what the behind the scenes things are. I can still look at Walter White and see Walter White. Like, he is a masterclass to watch. Like, he is insane when it comes to performance. So I'm lost in his performance. I love a great actor in the sense that I will not look at what the over-the-shoulder shot looks like, or if there's possibility that that's a shadow from the microphone in that shot. Like, as long as the performance and the storytelling is great, I'm pretty invested. I do look for, funny enough, I notice, like, the over-shoulder, you know, like, the beauty shots and the over-the-shoulder, if that actor is talking. Like, you know, I look for little things just because I know now.
Mm-hmm.
But I still love watching television, film, and going to theaters. Like, I haven't been jaded by the experience at all. What am I watching? What am I not watching? I am watching everything, especially if I can binge it. What? Geez, don't. Oh my gosh. So I watched Lovecraft Country binged again. I binge watched Evil, Holmstrom. I love horror flicks. I love anything thriller horror-ish. Even like the 80s ones that I'll go back and watch. Oh my gosh.
Just anything, it seems like. Now, your daughter acts too now, correct?
Yes.
Now, have you guys acted together on anything or no?
No, we auditioned for so many things together, but we haven't booked anything together. Because it was funny when she did, For Life, I auditioned for her mother role.
Oh.
And I didn't get it. Which is, it's okay, because I love Joy. But we haven't auditioned for anything together. But when we were in the trenches, even commercials, it's like, I thought that we would be a great, because our chemistry is crazy. I'm a mother, you know?
Yeah.
Nope. We got to a callback. And she got the callback and the second callback, and I got as far as the first. So
Oh, wow. They
clearly did not want me.
So I kind of think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What's the future like? I mean, what's the goals? I mean, you almost sound like you kind of, I don't want to say fell into this, but you have a career that a lot of actors and actresses would die for. I mean, you started off kind of, you know, green, and you've been on a lot of impressive stuff, and to have, you know, something like Manifest or Your Honor, you know, on your resume with, you know, the background that you have, not to diminish any of your work, but I think a lot of people would be envious. So do you look forward too much, or do you just kind of take it as it is because you don't want to get kind of, like I said earlier, greedy, or is it just kind of take it what comes?
I try not to look too far forward. The furthest I look is literally financial security, because I think that's one of my biggest fears. Mm-hmm. Is not having enough to take care of my family.
Sure.
In career wise, I don't look too. I tell you, just being sick, it's such a scary thought, because you almost program yourself not to that what happens in 5 years.
You're always waiting for that other shoe to drop.
Yeah. So I got to work my way out of that. I think that's my Achilles heel. But I would love to do directing. I love writing spoofs. Writing is something that I wanted to do as well, that I would love to still do. But thinking past 5 years career-wise and not financial-wise. I'm working on that part of it because you don't want the other. Because it's like, you know, and everybody keeps reminding me, oh my God, you're doing so well. These great things are happening. This thing is happening. And you know how life works. You know that with the great, there are hiccups in there. So I don't want to think that this hiccup is going to come in 3 years or, you know, just so for me, short-term goals are really good because it keeps me motivated. It keeps that fire in me. And I don't think about the gloom and doom of the possibility of things going wrong. And I think right now positivity is all I really need, especially health-wise, just to make sure that everything is functioning physically well.
And not to get too much into it, but how are you doing health-wise?
So much better.
That's good.
So much better. I'm super grateful that I have health care. Woohoo! I tell you, it's the little things that people take for granted. It is. Healthcare is, you know, insurance is huge. I got sick while I was shooting. I got sick while I was shooting Your Honor. And just to be able to go to the hospital, because I, you know, my hospital experiences aren't the best either. Like I tell people my doctor's experiences and they're like, what? Yeah, my treatment is crazy. And when I say I am over pleasant on purpose, just so that I have a good experience, you'd be surprised how the doctors treat me. Uh-huh. And I got sick, and just to be able to show my insurance card, it still excites me when they ask for my card. Isn't that crazy? You know, you think about the things that could really excite you, and the one thing that I make sure that is always taken care of is making sure my insurance plan is paid for. Like, is that up to date? Did I forget that? Even one that's on auto. Like, I need to make sure that that's good. And mentally, I feel pretty good given the state of the world. But super grateful that at the very least I can, you know, go to therapy or go to the doctor. That's one bit of this whole experience that has been the most exciting. When they sent me that package saying, yes, you can get health insurance.
It almost validates you as a human to a lot of these people's, a lot of doctors and clinics. It's almost a validation that you're human. Versus if you just showed up at the door with no insurance. It's unfortunate. But
what the treatment would be and how so crazy.
Yeah.
So crazy.
I just wanted to thank you for coming on. I love doing red carpet interviews, but one of the things that frustrated me was you're always asking the same question that people get asked so many times. And one of the things I wanted to do with this podcast was to be able to show the human side. I mean, we can talk about Manifest, we can talk about Your Honor and all those other shows and what was it like doing this and what do you know that's going to happen with this. But I think some of the things that are missing from interviews these days is learning about the person and what motivates them and drives them. And, you know, people watching Manifest to see, oh, it's an actress, she's doing her job, you know. But to learn what people went through to get there and what drives them, to me, is fascinating. And so it's one of the reasons I love having you on. And I just wanted to thank you again and wish you all the luck.
Man, Greg, thank you. This has seriously been fun. And I can't wait for us to be able to have in-person experiences again.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Congratulations on it all, man. I'm glad that you're in a better place. When I say I understand the struggle.
Michelle.
Thank you. That does it for this episode. Thank you for listening to the Staffa Corner.